The next case to be heard is number 2014-881. Again, this is number 14-881, Dublin City Schools Board of Education versus Franklin County Board of Revision. The appellant is the Board of Education. And when you're ready, Mr. Gillis, you may present your argument. But I think before I let you go ahead, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
Why is this case not subject to what the court has called the Bedford Rule?
That is really the crux of the entire argument. Just yesterday, this court issued a decision in which it stated the following. The BTA's decision is unreasonable and unlawful in its failure to consider and weigh all of the conflicting evidence. The Court of Appeals in a 10th District case just recently held, the BTA's decision also lacks the type of critical analysis that was cited with approval by the Supreme Court in Vandalia Butler. The bottom line is that there is such a thing as a good appraisal and a bad appraisal. And it is the Board of Tax Appeals' duty, along with the Board of Revision for that matter, to evaluate it and make factual determinations based upon not just the statement of a correct as of lien date and the appraiser living and breathing at the hearing, but that the data and the analysis within the report have probative value. This court has said in a concurring opinion that all attorneys and property owners know that they have a heavy burden to overcome when challenging a valuation. And the best way to do that is through, quote, a proper appraisal, end quote, which means that the determination by the BTA must go further than simply declaring any appraisal that has a correct as of lien date, an appraiser at the hearing, and was done for, quote, tax purposes, end quote, whatever that means, is sufficient. Those three criteria merely go to the competency of the appraisal and have absolutely nothing to do with the probative nature of the appraisal. The court only needs to look at the decision in Vandalia Butler that had an appraisal in it, had an appraiser testify, and the BTA went to great lengths to analyze that appraisal and reject it because the reasoning was circular therein. The 10th District Court of Appeals in the Southwestern City Schools case, which was presented as additional authority in this case, said, quote, given the state of the BTA decision, we cannot conclude that the BTA satisfied its duty to weigh the evidence and determine the facts concerning valuation. And they cited to Vandalia Butler, saying that the decision lacked the critical analysis that was cited with approval by this court. Our issue with this decision is that it isn't a decision, it's a declaration. This decision could be reprinted with minor changes and applied to every case that comes before the BTA. This court doesn't know what this property is by reading the decision. There is no factual data. There is no analysis of the data and analysis in the appraisal report. The decision issued by this court yesterday in the Navistar case vacated and remanded the decision for the BTA to, quote, carefully consider and weigh all the pertinent evidence. In this particular case, the only thing the BTA says is there's an appraisal in the record and they typed the correct date on it and the appraiser showed up. Therefore, it's good. There are, of course, laws in the state of Ohio regarding valuation of real property. Section 2 requires that all property be taxed due to uniform rule. 571501 implements that rule and orders the tax commissioner to promulgate rules for the determination of true value. The Ohio Administrative Code specifically states that the reliability of the income approach is based upon the reasonableness of the anticipated net income streams. It also states with regard to a sales comparison approach that its reliability is dependent upon the degree of comparability of the comparables used. It is that analysis that the Board of Tax Appeals is required to do, which they now refuse to do, let alone even tell anyone what the property is or what the facts of the case are. The fact is that the Board of Education, through cross-examination, and the testimony elicited in cross-examination is in fact evidence, showed that while this is a bank and office building, there were no comps of bank buildings in the appraisal. The comparables, sales and rent comparables, were unverified. Three of the rent comps were listings, which have been rejected by the Board of Tax Appeals in the past. All of the comps were decades older than the subject property. All comps were inferior to the subject property. The appraiser actually compared a converted single-family home built in 1955 to a bank and office building built in 2001. And maybe most egregiously, the appraiser failed to inspect the interior of any of the comparables. How does an appraiser make effective condition and quality adjustments when they've never seen the interior of any of the comparables? All of these facts were elicited upon cross-examination at the Board of Revision. They were ignored there. The BTA never mentions any of the arguments that were made to it by the Board of Education through its brief. It simply summarily declares because the appraisal had the correct as-of date and there was an appraiser living and breathing at the hearing that that appraisal was sufficient. That doesn't prove the probative nature of the evidence. That's why Bedford doesn't apply. There are two components to evidence. It needs to be competent to get in the record, and then it also needs to be probative of value. And the Board of Tax Appeals is no longer making any determination of probative value. They simply declare it based upon competency.
But to get past the Bedford rule, then an appraisal would have to be so deficient that the Bedford rule could not be applied. I mean, that would it's not dependent just on the final determination of its probative value. It has to be defective in some way, because otherwise there is no Bedford rule, right? I mean,
well, the question then would be, is the converse true? If and Bedford goes to part and parcel with the North Point Worthington decision, which I'm sure you're going to hear in a few minutes. Is the converse true? If the Board of Revision rejects the appraisal, then is the property owner required to come in with new evidence because the BOR rejected the prior evidence?
Well, the Bedford rule simply has to do with the default valuation.
Correct.
So the BTA's independent valuation,
okay,
could lead to a conclusion that mm-hmm. something is or isn't probative. But the question then is there a default to the auditor's original valuation?
Well, then the same standard that is used at the Board of Revision to get the benefit of the Bedford rule, which would be to affirmatively negate or show errors in the auditor's original value, which then means you can't revert to the auditor's value, that same standard has to apply to an appraisal. When you show errors in the appraisal such that that value is unreliable, then it can't be the default. How can an appraiser's value hold more weight than the auditor's value? In Dayton Montgomery Port Authority, this court said you couldn't revert back to the auditor's value because in that particular case, the property owner brought in actual construction costs, which actually refuted the auditor's value. In East Bank, the property owner brought in specific evidence that showed that the property wasn't complete and showed an error in the auditor's value. In those cases, you can't go back to the auditor's value. When you simply have an appraisal which is a estimate of what the property would sell for. And then you and the board, even if the Board of Vision accepts it, the Board of Tax Appeals is required to independently review that and determine whether the Board of Vision was correct. They're also supposed to determine independently what the value is. This court has said and that the General Assembly recognized the possible inherent conflict of the roles of the Board of Revision members as officials who conduct affairs of the county, and that's why they provided an appeal to the BTA, which is done on a de novo basis. We are now creating a presumption of validity, which this court has repeatedly rejected, of BOR decisions. We're just not calling it that. The 10th District Court of Appeals decision in Southwestern went into detail with regard to Vandalia Butler, which this court said specifically that a Board of Education can meet its burden of proof through cross-examination and post-hearing brief, showing that the Board of Revision's decision to reduce value in the first place was an error. While the Board of Tax Appeals will acknowledge this case, they never apply it, because they only use three criteria for an appraisal: as of tax lien date, a live breathing appraiser, and done for tax purposes. So under the Board of Tax Appeals' new form decision, the Vandalia Butler standard is a standard that can never be met.
Now, well, it can be met if the BTA itself finds the cross-examination persuasive.
But they have to do the analysis, which they don't do.
But then how much explanation does the law require them to make?
Well, at least enough explanation so that this court can tell what it did. This court doesn't even know what this property is by reading the decision. This court gets a parcel number. You change the parcel number, and you change the value, and this applies to every case that the Board of Tax Appeals issues. It's a boilerplate form template decision, which is per se unreasonable, because it is there was a quote here: when the BTA decision is silent on the subject of potentially material evidence, that silence makes the court unable to perform its appellate duty. Board of Education elicited a lot of testimony with regard to the flaws in this appraisal report and made legal arguments, none of which are mentioned. The Board of Tax Appeals generally acknowledges them, but doesn't even tell this court what they were, let alone why they either ignored them or summarily rejected them. How can this court then determine whether those determinations were reasonable and lawful? Based upon that, we would request that this court remand this matter to the Board of Tax Appeals with instructions that it evaluate all of the evidence, including the cross-examination testimony, determine or make factual findings, and give the basis for those factual findings with regard to market value, including market rents and the sales comparables, and to also explain its departure from its prior case law. In Central National Bank of Cambridge, the BTA went through a great deal of analysis and rejected an appraisal that had no bank comps for a bank building, had single-story comps when the subject was a multi-story building. They had different uses, and it used listings versus sales. The very same arguments were made here. But no one would know that because the BTA doesn't mention them. In the Halmarney case, the BTA rejected an appraisal because the comps, stating that if all the comps are rated either superior or inferior to the subject, it may not be possible to determine the reliable range of value and reach a single value indication using qualitative analysis. Every comp in this appraisal report was inferior to the subject. Board of Tax Appeals never mentions its own precedent because it doesn't matter anymore. Just type the right date and have an appraiser show up, and it's blindly accepted. Again, we request that this matter be remanded to the Board of Tax Appeals for further determination.
Thank you, Mr. Gillis. Mr. Saba, did I pronounce that correctly?
You did, Your Honor. Thank you. May it please the Court, I'm Paul Saba. I represent the appellee, Union Savings Bank. The BTA's decision in this matter should be affirmed because it acted lawfully and reasonably, especially in light of this Court's recent decision in North Point. And to answer your question, Your Honor, I believe the Bedford rule certainly does apply. North Point, though, is, I believe, directly on point, similar procedural posture, similar facts, similar issues, similar to this case. In North Point, the taxpayer challenged the auditor's assessed value. They went to a BOR hearing. They presented an expert. They presented a witness and evidence. The BOE filed a countercomplaint. They presented no evidence, but they just cross-examined the witness. They relied solely upon their ineffective cross-examination of that witness, and ultimately the BOR went ahead and changed and lowered the value, and the BOE then appealed to the BTA. Before the BTA, of course, they had the burden of proof. They waived their hearing, though, to present any additional evidence, and they relied solely on the statutory transcript, just like they did in this case. The BTA ultimately ruled in favor of the Board of Education and went ahead and set the value back to the auditor's original assessed value, and this Court reversed the BTA's decision. And clearly said, too, in that decision, and I'll quote here, when the BOR adopted a new value, the burden of proof shifted to the BOE, and since no new evidence was presented at the BTA should have retained the BOR's valuation of the property, which essentially is in part the Bedford rule, Your Honor. Similar to the facts in the present case, Union Savings Bank contested the auditor's assessed valuation. We went to a Board of Revision hearing. We provided an expert appraiser with over 30 years of experience who's an Ohio licensed certified general appraiser. She prepared a 30 to 40 page report, rendered an opinion of value based on two different approaches, all acceptable under USPAP. The BOE filed a countercomplaint. They came to the hearing with no evidence, no witnesses, and they relied solely upon their cross-examination. They did not challenge the admissibility of that report at all. They only challenged the weight of the evidence, Your Honor. And similar arguments were made before the BOR, as made before the BTA, as well as made in the briefs here before this Court. Although this is not a super BTA, they're making some of the same weight of the evidence arguments. For example, Your Honor, they say the expert's opinion of value was deficient because the expert didn't properly consider the bank space. I don't know what bank space is, but bank space is one of the items that they list. They specifically then call out, for example, covered drive-thrus, vaults, teller counters, security, and safe deposit boxes, and say because those items weren't considered, maybe in comparison to some other properties, that somehow this expert was now deficient. However, Your Honor, with respect to these items that are called bank space and these specific characteristics of the property, those aren't even real estate. As a matter of law and by definition, they are fixtures. And what the auditor is assessing is only real estate, and specifically 5701.03b, Your Honor, calls out business fixtures, which means items of tangible personal property that has become permanently attached or affixed to the land or the building that primarily benefit the business conducted therein. Obviously, covered vaults, you know, security deposits, these items which support the retail business of a bank are not part of the real estate. And those are one of the items, for example, that they address on the weight of the evidence arguments. And so some of these very features that they're relying upon to say the expert is somehow not credible are not even part of the real estate. Based on the evidence in the record, the BOR properly found that Union Savings Bank evidence to be competent, credible, and probative. The BOE appealed to the BTA, and as in Northport, the BOE waived the evidentiary hearing before the BTA. So they had the opportunity to present additional evidence. They could have satisfied their burden of proof. The burden of proof, of course, is a component of two different things. Either it's going to be the burden of production or it's going to be the burden of persuasion, right? They could have presented additional evidence that would have supported what they believed the value of the property to be. They waived that right and then chose to rely solely upon the statutory transcript before the BTA. They were going to argue again, essentially, that the weight of the evidence argument, not towards the admissibility. And so, as you pointed out, Your Honor, their weight of the evidence arguments would have to be so effective that you essentially render that report entirely useless, not probative, not valuable at all, and completely meaningless. Otherwise, there is going to be evidence in the record which still supports the taxpayer's opinion that the auditor's original value was wrong and contest the auditor's opinion of value. There would still be no evidence in the record to support the BOE's opinion of value, right? And so that's essentially what they're arguing. This case is very different from Vandalia Butler. Vandalia Butler was a legal argument where they challenged the admissibility of the appraisal report. In Vandalia Butler, when they went to the BOR hearing, the taxpayer didn't actually bring the appraiser with them. They actually just produced a copy of the report, handed it, and the BOE properly challenged on that basis the hearsay because the appraiser wasn't there. The BOR incorrectly allowed it into the evidence, and the BTA properly said, no, that's not, you can't consider that. It would be hearsay, and they excluded it. And so there was a legal argument challenging the admissibility, not the weight. Those facts, those cases are very different and distinguishable than from the Bedford rule as well as from North Point. In this case, Your Honor, when we went to the BTA, they presented again no new evidence. They relied solely upon the same ineffective cross-examination of the expert and were not able to establish.
And when you say that, they're relying on the cross-examination that occurred before the Board of Revision.
That's right, on the statutory transcript. And so it was the same evidence before, and that's all they relied upon, and they were not able to establish their burden of proof in that instance. And this court has clearly held in East Bank that, you know, a party appeals to the BOR, whether you like it or not, whether you're the taxpayer, whether you're the Board of Education, you've got the burden of proof. And you have to present competent probative evidence in some fashion or another. And if you look at all of the arguments that are made in the school board in this instance, Your Honor, they're all premised on this notion that the burden of proof didn't shift to the school board when they appealed to the BTA. They have decided that the evidence was not competent. They've decided they disagree with the BOR, and therefore they have decided the burden didn't shift. Well, I recognize they don't like the outcome from the Board of Revisions. Like it or not, they were the appellant before the BTA, and like it or not, they have that burden of proof. And they made the judgment call to waive their opportunity to present additional evidence before the BTA, and they made the judgment call that they were going to try and establish their burden of proof solely based upon the statutory transcript, which related only towards the weight of the evidence, not the admissibility of that evidence. Again, those are all their judgment calls that they made. And based on that, they were not able to establish their burden of proof. And so when you look at this case in comparison to the court's recent decision in North Point, as well as with the East Bank and the Bedford decision, the BTA acted lawfully and reasonably, and that decision should be affirmed, Your Honor. There's no basis for overturning it. You know, as this court has held, according to the Bedford decision, when the Board of Revision has reduced the value of the property based on the owner's evidence, that value has been held to eclipse the auditor's original valuation. And that's clearly what happened here. I recognize they disagree with that, and I recognize they are unhappy with the outcome. But when this court decided the decision in East Bank and said the appellant at the BTA has the burden of proof, they didn't condition that decision on whether you like the BOR's decision or not, and clearly you wouldn't because you're the appellant and that's why you're appealing. So when you appeal to the BTA, you've got that burden of proof and you've got to step up and produce evidence to satisfy it, or you have to have legal argument to do so. In this instance, they didn't, and North Point is directly on point. Based on all of those reasons, Your Honor, we would ask that the BTA's decision be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Saba. Mr. Gillis, 49 seconds for rebuttal.
Talk fast. Counsel's referring to the wrong Vandalia-Butler case. He's referring to the Bahrainji case.
There's two of them in our history.
The Timberlake case is the one that we are referring to, where there was an appraiser presented at the Board of Tax Appeals. The BTA did a thorough analysis and rejected it because of its probative nature. I would note that the appraisal was admitted to evidence. It was rejected because it wasn't probative. Two entirely distinctive propositions. Just because an appraisal is admissible doesn't mean it's probative of value. And that's really what the BTA is failing to do. They are deeming an admissible appraisal probative for all purposes. The BTA is also required to do a de novo review. They don't do any review. They look at the date and say, that's good enough.
Thank you, Mr. Gillis. This case will be submitted. The court will advise the parties of its decision. We'll now take a 5-minute recess, after which Master Commissioner Long will hear the remaining arguments.
All rise. You may be seated.